Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which for the first time in 2 weeks, I have up for you guys on pwtorch.com for tonight's Spring Break-In, which might be one of the dumbest names NXT has come up with in a while. But hey, you know, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. And here with me to talk about it is Bruce Hazelwood.
Hey, everybody. You can find my report for tonight's PLE Light Spring Break-In up on the Torch and my thoughts for what was a very up-and-down show.
Up-and-down show indeed. We're getting a little bit of static on the line, Bruce. I'm not sure if it's you or not. There we go. I guess it is. Okay. Cool. I'm going to keep going. So we did have a bit of a murder at the end of the show here tonight. Let's just start with that, shall we? Because I don't know. That's how we ended the show tonight. So pretty deadly. And Stax and Tony D'Angelo, they had a match earlier in the night. We'll talk about that later. It wound up culminating in Stax and D'Angelo throwing Pretty Deadly into a river, duct taping them and tying them into a river. We didn't see that, but it was very heavily, strongly inferred. Bruce, what do you think about them consistently trying to murder people here on NXT?
I mean, it's not just trying to. Don't forget, this is how they eliminated Two Dimes, after all.
Right.
Yeah, this thing. So it's just old hat for D'Angelo and Stax. Seeing this, I don't know if I said it to you in the chat, but I said it somewhere that probably my report too. Pretty Deadly doesn't win, and they're not going to, then they're definitely moving to Raw SmackDown, and they're going to get drafted. So I think this might have been the way to wipe them off. Now, to imply that they're murdered and to show up on Raw SmackDown is kind of a thing. Maybe they're just doing the whole JBL MAGA thing when he getting thrown into the river and whatnot. But it was a bit odd because I thought, all right, title match done, boom, cool, we're the show's going to end, and then all of a sudden we get this video, and I'm just going, what's going on? And then this whole thing with Stax and D'Angelo and the whole intimation that they offed Pretty Deadly by having them swim with the fishes. It's
with Luca Brasi.
They even brought that up. You're right. So it's a bit odd considering the only other time they did this was because, well, if you look at it as in PD's getting written off so they can be drafted, then it goes in line with how they wrote off Two Dimes. But it's also something they haven't done since Two Dimes. And they've ostensibly been turned face, while at the time they did that, they were heels. And this is something that heels would do, even though they did it to what is kind of pitched as the heel side in this feud. So one thing that we've always complained about with NXT since, you know, the whole shift to 2.0 and going back is maybe not half or maybe a quarter to a third of the characters, they vacillate between face and heel, or their antics, what they do vacillate between face or heel week to week, or too often that there's no consistency in their character disposition, which is not what you necessarily want. Now, I understand that having just clear face, clear heels like the 80s doesn't work anymore. But while people are complicated, I don't think most of us go through, you know, 1 week I'm just going to be an asshole to everybody, 1 week I'm going to be nice to everybody. Maybe we do, and I know there are certain conditions that do that for people, cause that for people. But I'd say that's just not something that is very believable. So having this happen is just a bit odd to me, and then having it happen as the last thing to end the show rather than somewhere earlier in the episode makes me also. There are a couple of things in terms of that I questioned tonight in terms of the placement and what they did.
Oh, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. I've got things to say. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to be dramatic.
That's all. Go ahead. That was all I had to say.
Oh, okay. Well, now I feel bad. Now I feel bad. I was just going for the dramatic effect here. For some reason, I'm like wound up tonight. I had like a cup of coffee around 3 o'clock this afternoon, and for some reason, the caffeine's still, I think, going. But no, I'm going to get into that right now. I think the booking of the show for me was weird. I wasn't expecting this match to kick the show off, the one Stax D'Angelo and Pretty Deadly in this trunk match. I figured we'd probably see this somewhere in the middle of the show or something like that. I was even thinking maybe, you know, the match before the main event, the where we saw Femi, whatever his name is, Obo Femi or something like that.
Who are you, Booker T? Obo Femi.
Yeah, I didn't have my notes up. I was trying to think on the fly. So, yeah, sure. I'm Booker T. I'm Booker T right now.
We said Opa FEMA. Like, dog, no. This is the Federal Emergency Management. This is whatever they are.
The funny thing is I was trying to look this guy up just to see anything about him, and that's actually what I Googled, and I wound up, like, with FEMA results, too. So, but you know, you could have put the opening match in that spot. I thought that, like, I mean – The crowd wasn't into this match very much. The build to this match was, I don't know, relatively, I would say lackluster. They didn't give it a whole heck of a lot of time. So I really didn't think it was going to kick off a PLE light type show here. Then, you know, the second match, let me bring up my notes because I forget what it was. Yeah, I was thinking to myself, why wouldn't you just, you know, you could start the second match off, Chase versus Breaker, you know, kick it off with that. The former NXT champion kicking the show off with basically a squash with Andre Chase, start it off with some heat like that, get the crowd going, and then go into this match or something. And then I'm thinking to myself, once Carmelo Hayes comes out in the middle of the show, why the hell didn't they start to show off with the NXT championship if they want, you know, especially if they wanted to put the women in the main event, which I'm all for. I'm all for putting the women in the main event. Don't get me wrong. But Carmelo Hayes versus Grayson Waller was the most anticipated match coming into this show tonight, at least for me. I was going to say we talked about it last week, but we didn't talk about it last week because it was just me. But Keith and
but
I.
But you're telling me that Kiana James and Brooks Jensen versus Josh Briggs and Fallon Henley wasn't your most anticipated match of the evening? I am shocked.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to disappoint, man. I'm sorry to disappoint. But no, Reverend Keith and I talked about that last week, and I believe he's on the line right now, so you know we can talk with him about what he thought about it in a little bit. But yeah, I thought the booking of this entire show was just a little off, and where Carmelo Hayes and Grayson Waller were, you know, that was the most anticipated show match of the night. It got the biggest response of the night out of the crowd in live in attendance. The rest of the show, the latter half of the show, just kind of fell flat for me. But I also feel like the live crowd, they didn't seem like they were really into any of the other matches, you know, in the night. They were definitely into the you know, triple threat at the end. But I mean, compare that to the response for Carmelo Hayes and Waller. It was it was night and day. It was a very, very quiet reaction in comparison. So, the booking, I think, tonight was a little, was weird. And I'm not sure why they did it this way, but I don't know. Didn't really work for me. So let's go ahead. We'll talk about the main event match, the triple threat women's match here for the NXT Women's Championship. Indy Hartwell, Tiffany Stratton, Roxanne Perez. Bruce, when I throw to you, if you want to throw the time in there, because I don't have your report up on my screen at the moment.
It was a little over 15 minutes. Let me make sure.
All right.
15:12.
15:12. There we go. So 15 minutes, 12 seconds for this match. Indy Hartwell coming out on top. Indy ended up getting taken out of the match in the middle of the match here. When it happened initially, even after seeing like the first replay, I kind of just figured it was a work. And even building up to the finish, it seemed like a work. It's a tried and true trope. Triple threat match, take somebody out of the match who's, you know, going to be the heroic victor. They come back and, you know, take people out, and you know, get the win. It's not my favorite trope, but it certainly has happened and can work. So I kind of figured it was all, you know, that was all kind of part of the plan. But then they showed the replay, and I don't know if it was from another angle or if I just was watching in like Indy's actual ankle hit, but it she definitely landed weird. So I'm not sure if she actually, you know, was taken out of the match to go get legit, go get checked on, or if it was a work. If she was legit taken out of the match and then cleared to come back, and that was the kind of the story, I think it was kind of a happy accident, you know, if that was the way it is, especially if she's legit fine and she just, you know, rolled her ankle, sprained it or something, and she'll be, you know, good in a week or two. You obviously don't want to see her get hurt. But if that was the case, I think it was a happy accident. Otherwise, you know, the match itself, I think, was pretty much what I expected. I kind of figured Indy was going to wind up retaining here. I didn't think they would hotshot or play hot potato especially with the women's title in NXT. At least I would hope not. So I kind of figured this was going to be it. This show, I mean, it kind of felt like it was going to be largely inconsequential anyway with the buildup to majority of the matches for this show. So, and I kind of feel like that was the case coming out of the show anyway. So, Bruce, let me throw to you on this, and then we will go to the phone line.
So to touch on what you were talking about before this with the booking order, usually with the opening match, like, you don't want to have usually it's meant to be an exciting match or something with the faces going over. So having a 2-minute Braun Breaker squash of Andre Chase probably isn't a good choice for that. Looking at how they laid it out, I thought that they should have had Hayes versus Waller as the opener, looking back on it. The reason why they went with the opener they did, though, is because they had those through lines throughout. They had another video with Stax and D'Angelo before they did the final one at the park, pier, wherever the hell they were. So that's the reason why I guess they did that, but it still doesn't mean that you had to end the show with that being the last. You could have done that before the main event. So the other thing, too, and I want to make note here, the other booking thing that got me was for the men's championship match, the one that went to the top of the hour, Alicia Taylor gave in-ring formal introductions. For the women's title match, the main event, she was at the timekeeper's area. And to me, when you have the ring announcer in the ring for those, it gives an even bigger sense of gravitas to the match and to the title. So I felt like even though they gave the woman the main event, they also kind of slighted that a bit by not having Alicia Taylor in there giving the ring introductions that she normally does for these types of matches. So that was the other thing to me that stood out a bit in terms of how this card was booked. Not necessarily in terms of, you know, matches and decisions, but in terms of little things like the structure of the booking and the whole use of Alicia Taylor or non-use to a certain extent. To this title match, it's not the only match where a legit injury occurred or likely occurred, because I believe Grayson Waller hurt his ankle as well. But here on that, this might have been the spot they had planned for Indy Hartwell to have an injury angle happen. But to me, here's why I believe it was legit. As someone who's watched a lot of MMA, I've seen a lot of legs bend backward that way on knockouts, the most famous one being Crow Cop being head kicked by Gabriel Gonzaga when Crow Cop was invincible, and then as he fell backwards unconscious, his knee bent backwards just like that. The other issue is when you watch the replay, it's not just that her leg bent backwards on her like that, but it also went under Perez's body, so she had the extra added weight of Perez, adding more to what could be some kind of injury. And I believe it's a knee injury by how the leg was bent. The other part that makes me believe it wasn't a work is that in WWE especially, when they have these worked injury angles, the camera person, the camera operator is usually right up in the grill, always showing and making sure you can see what's going on, seeing them grab their ankle or their arm or whatever it might be. They made a specific and concerted effort here to not show Hartwell while the other two are still on the outside of the ring next to her. And to me, that signaled that there was more to it than that. Even with medical out there, they usually, if it's a worked angle, they'll usually show medical. They made sure they did their best to try and block medical and Hartwell being shown during that time. And then before you even knew it, she wasn't at ringside because they had spent so much time just focusing on what was happening inside the ring. Again, generally with the worked angle, from my memory, WWE makes us make sure that we focus on the injury and the angle. So to me, the fact that she came out, like you said, is probably a happy circumstance. If there, you know, because it could be a ligament tear, a sprain, something that might make her have to vacate or go, and they go through a yet another tournament or yet another multi-person match, which they just went through after all the ladder match.
I know.
I think they should have just called the audible and put the title on one of the other two. I think Tiffany Stratton would be a good call, but I also have a strong feeling that she's going to be drafted to Raw. So for me, and the crowd was into it until that injury spot happened, right? So the thing that really sucked was the last part of this match was mostly just Perez and Stratton was kind of dull because the crowd was not into it, because you could see the crowd about two-thirds were only looking towards Hartwell and towards the entrance and hoping she would come back, and they weren't really into what was going on, even though the two women were really giving it their all to, especially Roxanne Perez. She's really been, she's come back and really started laying in her offense to her opponent. So, yeah, just a weird sort of ending all around. Oh, a couple weeks ago, after she won and Dexter was there on our roundtable, I said it wouldn't surprise me if Hartwell starts doing more and more things, especially heelish things, to retain the title, eventually culminating in a full heel turn where she uses Dexter to be the one to, you know, have the ultimate sort of title retention. While not a heel move, her grabbing Stratton by the leg and dragging her out and then covering Perez, she hit her finisher after, but Perez was already softened up by Stratton, kind of is letting me think that they're going to head toward that direction a little bit and see how it goes. I'm not sure if there are plans to bring Dexter back, but I think this could have been the audible they called in terms of how the match ending went, but this could also be the moment to start having her go more heel, because when she entered for the match, I didn't really hear any reaction from the crowd. So let's see what happens, but keep the ending of this match in mind in case she does start doing more heelish things moving forward.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you pointed that out. I do remember you saying that a couple of weeks ago, too. But I'm glad you pointed that out, because that's certainly something I noticed, too, is, you know, the way she won was, was not a clear babyface victory there. It definitely had some heelish undertones. So certainly agree with you there. All right, let's keep the train a-rolling here. I don't know why I said the train a-rolling. I'm going to say keep the train a-rolling, but apparently I closed my blog talk tab. So I got to reopen that real quick so I can actually go ahead and bring on Reverend Keith. Reverend Keith, how are we doing tonight, man?
Fine. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. Not too bad. What did we think of spring breaking?
Well, I think the show, the lackluster show, matched the lackluster name.
I agree with you there.
Yeah, it just seemed like, as Doc Bruce has already alluded to, the crowd wasn't into it, and it's the same 100 people every Wednesday night, as we know. And the match order and the booking was weird. I mean, like you guys have already discussed, I thought that was odd. And then the main event wasn't bad, but I don't know. I was beginning to wonder, Doc, if Indy was legit hurt. It looked like she was somewhat hurt as opposed to spelling. I don't know if it was a lower ankle sprain or calf, but she did look legit hurt. But either way, I didn't expect her to lose tonight. And it was good that they had a champion call out her challengers and still beat them, because Indy was the one that proposed this match. So I was happy to see that. Roxanne's time will come. The other women's match, I wasn't too pleased with. Lyra Valkyria and the mean girl, Cora Jade. I didn't think they had too good a chemistry. It was some mistimed moves, botches, and they didn't sell properly. What were your thoughts on that earlier women's match of the night?
Didn't they mute yourself?
Of course I did. But Bruce, no, go right ahead.
It's like the good reverend is reading my report, because I wrote that they just, it just seems like either they're not at a level to help to help each other, or they just didn't have chemistry. And I'm thinking it's the chemistry part, because we've seen both these women have better matches with other people. It did not. They were a bit too ambitious. Some of the stuff that Lyra Valkyria tried, just like her handspring. Basically, she tried to do a lethal injection with the fork, with the kick instead of the cutter, and she just did not bounce off the ropes very well. So that was a notable one, but there were some mistimed things with Corey Jade, especially, that you brought up as well. I'm a big fan of Valkyria, so it was kind of disappointing to see this. I would have hoped that the time away for Jade would have given her a bit more time in the ring to work on some of the fundamentals, but it doesn't seem like, again, it might just be the chemistry with these two. There are just some people that don't click. Even Eddie Guerrero, who was in great with almost everybody, had people he didn't click with. So I'm just going to chalk it up to that and hope that it was just an off night for overall most of the card and the crowd tonight. And also, I ended my report by saying it's hard to try and get invested and hard to try and have definitive stories going on right now when the draft is right around the corner and you have no idea how that's going to affect NXT and who's going to be left on NXT should, you know, they be involved in the draft process at all. I don't believe that they've alluded to NXT either being involved or not being involved in the draft yet. So I think that is also something that's kind of what's the word I'm looking for? It's kind of giving a pall to everything, just that's looming around the corner and no one knows exactly sure what's going to happen, especially with Vince being back in the fold. As much as he says he's going to leave it to Trips, we've all seen what's been going on, we've seen the reports, and we know that this is prime time for Vince during the draft to do some stupid stuff. So we shall see.
Yeah, the term for that, Doc, was looming over our heads. We have the draft looming heavily over our heads. Now, mm-hmm. two gentlemen that we know who will surely swim to shore and will be drafted will be pretty deadly. I thought that was an interesting write-off, and I hope to see them on SmackDown. What are your thoughts about the write-off tonight?
So I'm definitely thinking it's kind of the plan for Pretty Deadly at this point. You know, with the write-off, I mean, they've kind of done everything they can do in NXT at this point. I mean, they came in so hot. They won their tag team titles right off top. Right in their debut match, and then they've been on the top of the tag division, I mean, pretty much since. You know, obviously falling a little bit down the ladder in the last handful of months, I guess, but still, you know, still in contention for the titles and stuff. They're prime. They're absolutely ready for the main roster. I can't think of another. There isn't, I don't think, another tag act in NXT. Maybe Gallus. There's Gallus. Gallus could easily go up to the main roster. But Pretty Deadly is something I think that gimmick would easily go and mesh with, you know, the main roster. I mean, you've got like Maximum Male Models, you know, this is kind of an example, you know, of that type of a mold for the main roster. So I think they'll easily handle easily fit in there and flourish. Bruce, let me throw it over to you.
Yeah, we talked about the write-off earlier. Regarding PD, I wrote in my report that they were ready for Raw SmackDown before they ever debuted on NXT. So them moving is no surprise. It's just got to suck for us because they're not going to be on Tuesdays anymore. But yeah, they honestly could have skipped NXT and gone straight to Raw SmackDown should they have been given the option. Maybe they chose to go to NXT, but I feel like, honestly, their whole run at NXT, while fun for us, it was wholly unnecessary for them, I believe, because they've been ready to be basically the counterpart to the New Day for a while. Just think about what they did in NXT for the brief feud, right? I mean, they could do wonders on Raw SmackDown with each other. Think about what they could do with the Usos and the Bloodline. I mean, they've been ready. They didn't need to be in NXT at all. I should put it that way. They've showed both in the ring and on the promos that they're at a level that, at worst, is going to keep them as mid-card tag team. at best, they're going to be one of the best tag teams on in terms of championship reigns over the next decade. So while I'm going to be sad to see them go, they're going to make so much money and good for them.
100%. Yes, last thing. Go ahead.
Okay, last but not least, I want to say that the ending to the Kiana James, Denson, Briggs, and Fallon Henry saga was predictable. You know, she turned on him, and I guess it's going to be revealed that she's, you know, used him all along and swung him around and made him look stupid. So now he's going to have to go running back to his buddies with his head between his legs. You know, I mean, we could see this coming 2 months ago. I thought they would have at least become more creative with that. What were your thoughts on the way they ended this family feud, so to speak? Guys, listen, thank you so much for what you're doing. I love hearing you guys. I love reading your columns on the Torch. Thanks for taking my call. You guys, simmer on that. Let it marinate. I'll talk to you next week.
Bruce, let me kick it off with you.
Thank you for your kind compliments, Reverend. And unfortunately, I don't know if this actually has ended because it should have ended at least 3 months ago, but they're still going. And I believe it's not ended because we don't know yet who Sebastian is. And once the Sebastian reveal happens, then we're getting closer to the actual end of this feud, in my opinion. This was, again, one of those matches where we've said this about the last 2 or 3 months worth of their matches or anything they've been involved in. Their crowd is just apathetic. They don't care. They don't care enough to like it. They don't care enough to hate it. The only person they actually had any room for was Fallon Henley, but cheering for Fallon Henley doesn't make up for not caring about the other three in this situation. So I just, yeah, I was ready for this to be done 3 months ago. They've kept it going. We, like the Reverend said, we knew what was going to happen. We knew this whole thing was going to play out the way it did. I'm just waiting to see the reveal of Sebastian, and I need to message Tom and see some people who are in the PC that could potentially debut as Sebastian as her boyfriend or partner or lover or whatever the hell they're going to go along with it. And I think the eventual feud ender will be some sort of gimmick one-on-one match between Jensen and Sebastian.
Yeah, I'm so ready for this to be over. I don't really even want to talk about it. That's why I threw it to you. What the hell? The finish to this match and then the ending, I've never loved you, and then Briggs and Jensen reunite, and what was the point? Them up for a week or two? I don't know. I just don't know. I
will say this. Nothing has made me take Jensen more seriously than him actually wearing wrestling gear like he did tonight.
I'll definitely give him that.
That doesn't make up for the whole feud and angles, I'm just saying.
No, absolutely not. But I actually got to give him credit for being able to kind of clean up and, portray that type of a character. Excuse me. I really wasn't expecting him to be able to pull it off as well as he did, to be honest with you. But, he did. I hope this is the end of it. I'm sure we'll still get something between Kiana James and Fallon Henley because now you get the women feuding. So, because you can't have an intergender match in WWE. So you're not going to have, Kiana James and Brooks in a match there, but so it's most likely going to be another match between Kiana James and Fallon Henley. But
what they might do is James and Sebastian versus Henley and Jensen, not Briggs.
Oh yeah, okay.
Because the person that would have the most emotional investment in that feud would be Jensen and not Briggs because of Sebastian and James.
No, I hear you. That makes sense. That actually makes sense. All right, let us keep moving. Let us keep moving because I'm done talking about this feud. I'm definitely done talking about this feud. So let's go ahead. Actually, sorry, we got one more person on the phones. And I know this phone number, area code 914. But let me know who you are, and then let's talk about some wrestling.
Hey Nate. Hey Bruce. It's Brad in Florida. How are you?
Hey Brad. Not too bad. How are we doing tonight?
I love hearing you guys talk about this stuff. And Bruce, that was so observant of you, because I noticed that as well with Aisha Tyler. I think that's her name. Sorry.
Alicia Tyler.
Sorry. Being in the ring to, you know, introduce that championship match, just like something that I just found a little bit strange and I didn't know the reason for it. And I also, Bruce, like you, picked up on that the cameraman, like normally you'd have, if Indy was not actually really hurt, you would have had Vic Joseph be like, and Indy's down. And what's going to happen now? Does she have to forfeit her title? You would have had some situation, I think, like that. I watched that landing too, and it really did look like her calf bent at a very awkward angle. I didn't think it was a knee. I felt like it was like a calf, and it just bent at a really weird angle when Tiffany did that jump and landed. And like you said, she bent under Roxanne. I'm just wondering, like, during that match, like, what are they thinking? Like, these two young, very young wrestlers, and I understand Roxanne does have far more experience than Tiffany does, but I'm just wondering what they were thinking. Like, I saw a lot of communication from the ref, a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a tremendous amount, and they really weren't doing that much for that 5 or 6 minute period. Like, there was not much going on. It was just kind of just standard blah moves, and it just seemed like, hey, we don't have our third dance partner. Like, what do we even do here? And I just wonder if they were kind of communicating, like, if she doesn't come back, you know, who wins this title? And I don't know if the ref has an earpiece and is saying to them, you know.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They do, right, of course. So that was just really kind of strange and interesting. And then the Grayson thing, when he tripped going into the ring, also that I really couldn't tell, because it seemed to set up the finish in the way that it did, where he was kind of down and then Mello did the Mello don't miss leg drop, but that was an actual injury as well.
Yes.
Like you kind of alluded. Yeah, you do. Right.
Yes. Because again, the thing that I was looking for, and this goes back to how WWE does stuff, they never showed a replay of him entering for that rolling stutter. And he immediately grabbed his ankle. He had enough in him to at least set up for the nothing but net. But if you watch, as soon as the pin hit 3, he shoved Hayes off and immediately rolled to the outside. So to me, that is, again, coupled with the fact that they never showed the replay of that spot, leads me to believe that it's a legit injury. And it sucks, because if he and Hartwell are both hurt, well, especially for him, it's never a good time to be injured, but he was certain to be drafted at this point, I feel like, because he loses every single big feud, and there's really nothing left for him to do, right? Miz isn't the Miz anymore in terms of he does his things, but he's not kind of that top act anymore. Who could you put into that top spot again or be in that spot? It's definitely Waller. And I've discussed before how I think Waller has a much higher ceiling and he's much better in the ring. But for him to be hurt right now, and if it's anything extended, it's really, really unfortunate timing, because I feel like if he does get hurt, they're going to have him come back to NXT instead of going straight to Raw or SmackDown. But, I do believe it's a legit injury. So.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be something terrible. It could be a roll of the ankle, or it could be a twist of this. But, you know, I think if he has a few weeks, you know, if the draft is, you know, I think probably by the beginning, middle part of May, he should be good, I would imagine. But you don't know. And even the way he's so unceremoniously, like, you know, he was just gone at that point. Like right after the pin, you just did not see him. There was not a shot of him laying there. There was nothing as far as I remember. So, you know, if that was his last appearance in NXT, I'm not saying it was disappointing, because he did a great match, but it's just kind of disappointing to see him go out like that. But hopefully bigger things on the horizon for him if he does get drafted, which I really do expect. And about the draft, you know, I was really surprised when Carmelo at the end of his match called out Bron Breakker, and Breaker came out and everything like that, because I thought for sure, that tells you right there, Bron Breakker is not coming up. And I do wonder if it has something to do with, like, his girlfriend is Cora Jade and she's not ready to be called up and he doesn't want to be separated from her. So why not give it another, 6 to 12 months in NXT? And I don't know if that's, has anything to do with it or if it has nothing to do with it. But I did find that to be almost like disappointing, because I was kind of looking forward to Bron Breakker potentially coming up and being on Raw. And I kind of feel like he's done everything he could do. But another interesting thing that I just wanted to bring up to you guys is I was just scrolling through Twitter and I saw Andre Chase wrote, oh God, what did he write exactly? It was something like, very tough way to go out, but when big disappointments happen, big things can also be on the horizon. Or it was something like, next steps, or it was something like that, where I mean, you guys could probably pull it up quickly, but would you be surprised if Andre Chase, we saw his last match tonight? Or, that was not one I was expecting, but.
Yeah, this has been happening quite a bit lately on the show, and it kind of sucks, but I've been on call every other week, and it seems like every other week when I'm on call, something breaks in the middle of the show. So Bruce, let me throw it to you while I try to fix our email server.
All right. So I'm going to hit on Breaker real quick. I don't think what did they call the next one? Not Roadblock, but something. Whatever the next PLE is.
The one in Boston, right?
Battleground.
The one right here in Lowell, Massachusetts. I will be there 12th row.
And didn't they used to have an actual pay-per-view called Battlegrounds or something?
Yeah, they basically rebranded the WWE pay-per-view into an NXT pay-per-view again.
Like Revenge Day. Yeah, okay. So just because that's happening at the end of May, and the draft is end of April, beginning of May, doesn't necessarily mean he won't be drafted. We've seen before people either on Raw, SmackDown, or NXT get drafted somewhere else, and then they'll say on TV they have to finish up their commitments to their other brand before they officially join this brand, so to speak. So I could see Breakker being drafted, them saying he still has a big match coming up at Battleground for the NXT Championship against Carmelo Hayes. Obviously, he would lose, but we've also seen the NXT champion come to Raw and debut with the NXT champion when Kevin Owens is that for John Cena's open challenge. So I don't think this means that it's a lock that Breakker stays. I still think it's more likely that he gets drafted than stays, because I just want him off my TV. But let's see. The second part of your question was on – I'm trying to remember now.
It was on Andre Chase saying that
sure,
he –
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Yeah. So I did see that tweet earlier in the night, and Andre Chase's character and the – ability to embody this kind of a character is something right in Vince McMahon's wheelhouse. Doesn't mean it's a good thing, but it's something that Vince likes to have on his roster, right? We've seen it all throughout the years. And I said after the PLE, I stand and deliver, that we saw here the Chase U crowd does travel, but it is also a hardcore crowd. So it would be interesting to see if he would be able to channel that kind of – he has a charisma. There's no other way he'd be able to get this kind of reaction from the crowd if he didn't have this sort of connection and charisma. So I feel like if they do move him, it's going to be a real detriment to Duke and Thea, unless if he gets drafted, the sort of going away thing is he leaves the university in the capable hands, quote-unquote, of Hudson, and they go from there. And, of course, Hudson just runs it into the ground. But that's for a different day. I think Vince has never cared about the detrimental effect drafting people or calling them up has on NXT as a whole. So while it may be a detriment to Hale and Hudson, I don't think that's going to stop Chase from being drafted. His tweet does read like a farewell, and if so, he is just going to occupy that role where he's going to take a few bumps, get squashed, and get paid very well. Good for him.
Yeah, he wrote, this is exactly what he wrote. He wrote, it's been a hell of a ride, WWE NXT. This is a teachable moment. New beginnings are often disguised as painful endings, NXT Spring Break. So that's what he wrote. I mean, that's really, really interesting. And my last thing is just on the end, which you guys started talking about at the beginning of your show, but with the murder or the symbolic, you know, finishing off of Pretty Deadly. Obviously, I give it a 99% chance that they get drafted after that, which is cool. But it's interesting, like, and I was trying to remember, like, Tony D'Angelo has, quote-unquote, whacked so many guys off the NXT roster to the main roster. It's almost like they plan it that way so he can be the guy who does the, you know, symbolic whacking of the talent to the next step. Like, it happened with Santos Escobar. I think I don't remember if it was Ciampa's last match that was against Tony D'Angelo.
I believe it was Ciampa, and I believe Pete Dunne's last match was also with Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah, yes, Pete Dunne as well. So there might have even been another. I don't remember, but thank you for reminding me of that, because I knew there was another one. But, I mean, it's for sure after that. And I thought it was, you know, kind of an interesting, you know, symbolism more than like, oh, this guy, you know. Obviously, yes, he's supposed to be a mafia murderer, and that's kind of the joke behind it, but I think it was more just a symbolic, like, almost goodbye, and, like, this is gone from your life in NXT, and now there's a rebirth in whatever. I don't know, but I just thought that was really interesting and kind of a cool way to end the show, almost like a, you know, like you guys were saying, like, why, you know, kind of a strange way to end the show, but I thought it was kind of an homage to Pretty Deadly more than anything, and I thought that was kind of, in a sick way, kind of nice. And I guess my last thing is, do you see after the loss, do you really see Tiffany Stratton and or Roxanne getting drafted this week? Because the only reason why I ask is because Tiffany was on SiriusXM, and I actually did listen to that interview with Busted Open, and she did say, I'd like to spend more time in NXT because I do think I need to work on my selling and my in-ring psychology a little bit more. But she said, if I do get called up to the main roster, I'm ready. So I want your guys' thoughts on that, and I'll leave you guys with that. And I hope Nate is back and from his email server issue. And Bruce, you know, thank you so much for answering my questions. And you guys are a great listener, and I'm excited to listen to the rest of the show.
Nate's technically here, but Nate's bashing his head against the desk right now. Bruce, I'm gonna be leaning on you heavily for the next foreseeable future here.
Okay. So when it comes to Tiffany Stratton being drafted, I commend her for understanding that there are things she needs to work on before she feels comfortable moving up. If they want her on Raw or SmackDown, they're gonna move her to Raw or SmackDown. And that's not to say that she's not going to be able to still learn and work on those things on Raw or SmackDown. She'll have, you know, arguably she'll have even better people to help her with, you know, the current wrestlers on Raw and SmackDown to help her with those things. And I think she's selling herself short a little bit. I do think she's done, I mean, vast improvements in her ring psychology and selling from when she first began. I think if you just watch the match tonight, yeah, a lot of the stuff after Hartwell's injury, there was a bit of coaching from Brewer to make sure they knew what they were doing. But in terms of what she actually does in the ring, and I think the one thing that really topped it for me was a couple weeks ago, I forgot which match it was, when she hit her You Can't Escape BME combo, she held her pin and she was just smiling with her holding her head in her hands, just kind of looking at the camera like, I'm just, you know, a little, you know, a ditzy girl knowing that I'm really good at whatever I'm doing kind of thing. And she knows her character in psychology. So Perez, I don't think, is going to be drafted. I think she's someone to look at as sort of a Johnny Gargano type for the women's division moving forward. And don't forget, I think Roxanne Perez is like 22 years old, 23 years old, something like that. She can be in NXT for another 5 years and still not even be in her athletic prime yet. So I feel like between those two, Stratton is 99% likely to get drafted, while Perez is 1% likely to get drafted. And I feel like when I look at it, again, from her debut, we said Tiffany Stratton is going to make a lot of money on the main roster someday. And we didn't see the improvement happening as quick as it has. The other person that's improved as quickly as her in the women's division recently has been Sol Ruka. But I'm not sure if, to me, I said in a different chat, if you don't put the title on Stratton tonight, then she's being drafted. There's no other reason to have her there. She can work on what she, you know, she has the things she says she wants to work on. But again, she kind of
Bruce, you give that a 99% chance. You're like that confident. I mean, I'm not doubting it. I'm just surprised like that number is so high.
Hey, take that for what it's worth, considering all our predictions have, you know, always been 100% accurate, like Shayna Baszler's going to lose her next title match.
That's funny. Yeah, man. It's just incredibly interesting that you give Roxanne also such a low percentage, because I do feel like, you know, I feel like just her being in the Royal Rumble, as well as, you know, obviously Zoe Stark, who I think is probably going to get drafted too this week. Just her being in the Royal Rumble made me think, okay, they feel like Roxanne is ready. And Zoe did last pretty long in the Royal Rumble, if I remember correctly. She was, you know, there for a pretty long time.
I didn't watch the Rumble, so I can't say.
No, she was. She was in there for quite a bit. I mean, most of the women, the NXT women in the Rumble, they actually had a pretty decent showing.
Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Unless you want me to stay on and co-host for you, Nate, I'm half kidding, but
I'm actually half saying if you want to feel free. I'm unfortunately not able to pay very much attention right now. We're in the middle.
Match left, right?
I think so. We're in the middle of a big like email migration at work, and something did not go according to plan tonight. So I've got to get that fixed, or we don't have email. So
there's only one match left, and a couple of backstage segments. So it's not too much longer, Nate.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So if you guys want to wrap it all up, I'll be here and maybe chime in every once in a while.
All right, let me go ahead and stick with I'll run through the rest of the stuff that we haven't run through yet, including the last match, which I'm going to spend a good time on because I'm very high on a certain individual. But so as we go through the rest of the show, we talked about D'Angelo and Sax versus Pretty Deadly and all the culmination and all that. One of the things we haven't talked about that didn't have a match or segment on the show beyond this was the whole Dijak and Ilya Dragunov thing from last week that continued into this week. After the match and the car drove away, Dragunov was making his way as Mackenzie Mitchell was trying to interview him, and he got blindsided by Dijak. Dijak eventually closed the door of the, I think, the maintenance trailer onto Dragunov. And what was notable here was we saw Oney Lorcan, who's a coach at the PC now in NXT, come out with some of the other officials to get Dijak away from Dragunov. So,
okay,
you know, that,
I could have swore I saw Oney Lorcan tonight. So I didn't
your
think
favorite,
it was just
so,
me. All right.
Yep, he was there telling off. He was one of two bald dudes with a beard, so maybe that's why you got confused, Nate, seeing a little bit of yourself there. But they
like
pulled off.
In the mirror.
Yep, they told Dijak, well, Indy Hart will do that later on the night. They told Dijak off, and that was that. Later on in the night, so go from that basically into the Valkyria-Jade match, which we already talked about, wasn't very good. The one thing about the Hayes and Waller match we didn't bring up was the fact that Waller comes out with the golden shoe for him to do the golden shoe. It's just hilarious, even though the shoe is just absolutely disgusting. I've never done one. I never cared to do one. So if you do one, good for you, whatever. The one thing regarding the women's title match we didn't discuss was that throughout the night they had little vignettes, videos for each one, talking about why they're going to win, why the others aren't going to win. I thought Tiffany Stratton was done really well when she actually walked in, or she was dropped off by an SUV. Perez's was a very just pure baby face, just really relatable, showing stuff of her as a kid, dressed in gear. And then Indy Hartwell, as I alluded to, was talking to herself in the mirror, hyping herself up, basically trying to give herself a self-confidence boost. And then something that is setting up for the next, I think, is going to have a match next week with the ultimate thing probably resulting in a title match in a few weeks, is Joe Gacy confronts Joe Coffey, who had just got off the phone with his brother Mark Coffey, challenging them to a title match for the Dyad. I don't know if you all saw, but James Drake, Rick Hughes, Jagger Reed, tweeted that his release request was denied, but that their contract is up later in the year, I think October. So what they're doing here is Gacy challenged Coffey to a match. If Coffey wins, Dyad can never challenge for the tag titles as long as Gallus are champion. However, if Gacy wins next week, then the Dyad will challenge Gallus for the tag team championship at a later date. So I'm assuming that Gacy gets the win through some shenanigans next week. Ava told him to get something ready, and I couldn't make out what she said. And Gacy said, in time. So I'm guessing that's going to play into the ending of the match next week. Mitchell was also in the back later, and she interviewed Dragon Lee, asking him about Noam Dar, and he basically said that, I want the Heritage Cup, and I hope our paths cross again. From there, the video screen behind her flickered and started playing with a video from Scripps to Axiom. Scripps was on a... If you ever watched the TV show Gargoyles, he was basically on a gargoyle ledge looking out while a green screen played like a thunderstorm behind him. He looked like he was in black and yellow gear, almost like Scorpion and Wolverine mixed together, and basically just calling out Axiom, telling him he's coming for him. I thought after the golden ratio he got when he was flying into the ring, that would have been enough to end this feud, but I guess not. And then we go to the last match of the night. It was the debut of Obafemi, who has been hyped with him, or videos of him just throwing stuff around, including sofas and whatnot. I was thinking that the opponent for him would either be Miles Bourne, Dante Chen, or Big Body Hobby. These are generally the people that are the debut enhancement talents, or the enhancement talent for debut matches. Unfortunately for him, it was Oro Mensah. So for someone who had all those hype vignettes back in the day, to grow all the way down to being an enhancement talent for a debut talent, that's kind of a precipitous fall for the former, I just forgot his name when he was in UK. Oh, God. Oh, well, for the former, for Oro Mensah. Obafemi, they hyped his size. He's 6'6", weighs 270. He's a bit green, obviously, but I'm going to compare him to some other big men that have come through NXT. Not because I say that he's the same, but in a big man mold. So compared to Omos, compared to Dabakato, Babatunde, whatever you want to call him, Obafemi showed more agility, more quickness, more charisma, more sort of instinct for what to do in the ring, and more connection with the crowd. I am very high on Obafemi. I'm really looking forward to what he does moving forward. His finisher was a pop-up layout powerbomb where he popped him up and then laid out with him on the powerbomb, done really well. They have someone here, I think, who at worst is going to be a Dijak. And if that's the case for him, he's still going to have a good place on the car. He's going to be on TV. He's going to be on PLEs. So if you haven't yet, go back, watch Obafemi, and be like me and buy his stock right now, because he is going to do things in NXT and eventually on Raw and SmackDown. And I believe that's... Oh, last thing. Wesley was watching video. Tyler Bate appeared. Tyler Bate offered his services to be in his corner next week as he faces Gulak with Charlie Dempsey. He agreed. They started watching video. It's the main event. So that was NXT overall. I'll throw it to either of you, and if you want to talk about any of those.
Greg, well, if Nate is still busy, the one thing I'll say is Dragunov took a hell of a beatdown. That was a really violent beatdown by Dijak, and getting thrown into the ladder multiple times, and then having the garage door shut on him was pretty intense. That was really interesting. And he's another one that I'm just wondering, Bruce, if you feel like he's going to be drafted, because there has been a lot of buzz about him. And, that would be a big loss for NXT, I feel like, even though he has been injured a lot of the time recently.
Yeah, my thing with Dragunov is not just the injuries, but he's one of those, like a young AJ Styles, like a Dynamite kid, where they need to teach him how to rein it back a bit. He's a little too intense, I think, and in the long run, I'm not sure if that's a benefit to him. So I believe that if they do draft him, they do have the people that can help him rein it in. It's just that in NXT, they don't really have characters like this, and he represents something different, whereas if he went to Raw or SmackDown, he'd just be yet another sort of intense yeller that they already have a lot of on Raw and SmackDown. So I think they would have to work on the circumstances with Ilya Dragunov for him to be drafted. I think Dijak, he has more of a probability to be drafted only because he's been on Raw and SmackDown before under a different moniker, of course. But with this kind of character, I think he has more of a chance to stay. It's a little more subdued than Dragunov, but enough to where his character stands out from the Braun Strowmans, from the Judgment Days, whereas Dragunov would go in there and just be, you know, basically a small version of Braun Strowman yelling and huffing and puffing all the time. So, and if they're going to move Breaker, he's another one of those kind of characters. So it's, to me, I think if you're going to draft people from NXT, outside of Breaker, the most likely ones to me are in the women's division. Like you said, Stratton, Stark, those people.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited to see not only who goes up, but who comes down, because I wonder if there are, or if you see this, and I guess we can kind of start wrapping up, but if you see, you know, an Apollo Crews type coming from, you know, the main roster who maybe is not drafted, if you see another, you know, group of those people come to NXT to, you know, be those experienced people like a Dijak was, or like a an Apollo Crews was, because I could see certain people, you know, just again not being selected and being forced either to go to NXT. So I'm just wondering if you see that upcoming this Friday and Monday with the draft as well.
But there's always a possibility, but like you said, it would have to be undrafted because there's no indication that there's going to be any NXT representation in terms of being able to draft anybody. Even if people can be drafted from NXT. So there's a possibility. Now, the thing is, with NXT and people coming back down to NXT, it generally tends to happen outside of draft times. Like you said, Apollo Crews, we saw Jinder Mahal recently. In the last year, we saw people like Natalya come down as well. So I feel like there's always a push and pull, because if you do bring them down, then you're also taking TV time away from someone who could use more of what NXT is, and that's a developmental time. The thing with, you'd have to bring a veteran down who has enough respect and has enough to give that not only would the NXT crowd be okay with it, but you don't want to give a sense to the wrestler that someone's coming down and taking their spot when they've been working the whole time to get that spot, right? So,
sure.
You know, if anyone does come down, I'm looking at people who have a connection to NXT, but who, you know, may not be used very much, or if they do come down, aren't looking to, you know, Dana Brooke is someone who I feel like can come back, and even if she doesn't go right into the women's title picture, is someone that the fans would react to very well, and I feel like could have sort of an Apollo Crews on an NXT. But just off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody who isn't already involved in some kind of group or storyline that makes sense for them to come back, unless they're already, you know, they're not already being used on TV. I think if anything, it's just more likely that people from NXT move to Raw and SmackDown, and then people from the PC come to take their place.
It's funny that you bring up Dana Brooke, because she was mentioning that she would love to, like, kind of pull off what Mandy Rose pulled off. And I think that would be awesome. You know, that would be just amazing if she kind of changed her persona, came back down there and did something. But and I do think it would be well
there
received.
There were three women who were called up way too early around the same time at NXT. Dana Brooke was one of them. Lacey Evans was one of them. And why did I just forget the third off the top of my head? There was Dana Brooke. Oh, and Mandy Rose. So those three were called up way too early from NXT in terms of when they first made their debuts on Raw and SmackDown. Especially Lacey Evans. She definitely had – there was something working in NXT, but she just didn't get enough time to develop that. And we've seen that it's kind of hindered her until this day. It has hindered Brooke a bit too, but she's at least been on TV more and been in some high-profile matches. And we know what happened with Mandy Rose. The thing is that I don't know if – I mean, I said about Mandy Rose too. Like, I didn't see her as a champion, but she became champion for a long time. So there is definitely a possibility for Brooke to do that. And if anyone is set for that, it's probably her because, again, it's not going to be Ripley. It's not going to be Belair. It's not going to be really anyone else that has a big connection to NXT because they're already so involved in things. And, yeah, I think I'll leave it at that because I just – again, I think it's more likely that PC people get called up to replace the people in NXT that do get drafted.
And the last thing is, do you see a very bright future for the talents that they have there based on who might be going away and what they will need to replace them with? Like, do you see a lot of incoming, you know, talent that's very high-end, such as, you know, I don't even remember his name. Booker T didn't either, so don't kill me.
Obafemi.
But do you see? Yes, Obafemi. Do you see a lot of people that are ready to step into that spotlight? Because I just don't know, you know, if they're going to get back in the same ratio what they are about to potentially lose.
I think that with how they've been recruiting, they're actually set pretty well. We've seen. So Femi is one of those that they hyped a few weeks ago as three people that are debuting soon. It was him, Tank Ledger, Danny Palmer. And they're all going, in my opinion, they're going to be just fine. I'm not sure if they all have as high of ceilings as each other, but they're all going to be fine. They also, this is a big if, but there are the Cavender twins who are done with Miami now. They have an NIL deal with WWE. From what I've seen, they've shown a lot of interest in training with WWE, but once they take those first bumps, who knows if they want to stick with it. If they do, they're highly popular, highly athletic, obviously playing D1 basketball. So they have people like that. You see the PC keeps getting loaded with former Division I athletes, pro athletes who tend to have good bases to learn the business in terms of the actual stuff in the ring. So I think they'll be fine. You'll have to listen to Bonus Point and talk to Tom more about this because he has a better grasp on who exactly is in the PC right now, who's training. You should watch Level Up as well. So you're going to see a lot of these talents before they make it to NXT. So I think that looking towards the future, I mean, we've gone through this in every cycle, right? When they came out of Seth Rollins, Bo Dallas, all of them, like, oh, what's going to happen next? Then when we came out of Black and Gold, you had, you know, the Samoa Joes, the Finn Balors, the Shinsuke's, were like, oh, no, what's going to happen? Then you have Gargano, Ciampa, and people like that. And it's, oh, no, what's going to happen after that? And then we get Breaker. And then, hey, so, I mean, I feel like we go through this in waves, and each time it ends up being okay. So I wouldn't have too many worries on that front.
Well, tremendous analysis, and thank you for letting me kind of co-host with you. I hope I was a little bit helpful and not making you go at it alone. And Nate, I wish you good luck with this email thing. You got.
No problem, Brad.
Thank you very much, man. I wasn't listening to a lot of what you said, but it sounded important and informative and awesome. And I just appreciate you stepping in and helping me out because I'm going to be swamped for a little while, I think, tonight.
Good luck, guys.
We also
guys.
Have three emails, two from last week.
All right.
Let's go.
Yeah. I will get to those real quick. Thanks, Brad. Nate, I will hit these, and then you don't have to respond at all. You don't
pleasure.
Have to. When
absolutely.
I'm done, I can
pleasure.
Let you know. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right.
I will,
so,
I'll chime in if I got something to say.
I'm going to start with JB's email from last week. It's at A-Team. It's JB from Detroit. With the women's triple threat match for the title next week being based on the idea that Indy is beatable, I don't really see how she can lose. He was right. I don't really see Roxanne taking the pin and Indy losing the match after basically being labeled a joke would be pretty devastating for her character and her legitimacy moving forward. Press pin, actually. What do you think the chances Indy loses next week are, and if she does lose, is that the right call? How would they salvage her character? The only solution I can see is her losing in a controversial fashion, then being called up in the draft in a few weeks. So, again, I feel like the injury changed what was going to happen in the match. It also could have been, again, it could have been a spot they legitimately had set for her to have an injury angle, but I think the legitimate nature of what happened kind of changed how the ending was going to go down. I'm not sure if Perez was originally scheduled to be the one to take the pin, but she did here. And again, you know, this wasn't something that we part were going to lose. Not her first title match after everything that she's gone through. Not the whole beat-up. Well, I guess it wasn't her first title defense because she beat Zoe Stark a couple weeks ago. But with the story they've been building with her, it didn't seem likely. Now, if the injury does prove to be something that is more long-term, then yes, they should have called an audible tonight and made the switch to somebody, whether it was Perez probably would have been the best call because of that connection she already has. But I guess we'll see if any news comes out of Hartwell's knee in the next week. If everything's fine, everything's fine, and they got lucky there. He ends it with, I understand that Grayson Waller is your typical pest heel who talks his way out of losses, but since it was likely known he was going to be matched up against a face the caliber of Melo, I think they should have given him some higher caliber wins in the process. At the moment, I just don't buy Waller beating Melo. As always, love the Shungle VIP. And this is something that the last time I was on, we discussed it. Waller has literally lost every single big feud in NXT, which made it so that you don't buy into him actually being the one that's going to win the title matches, right? And the one that did it was when he lost that steel cage match to Braun Breaker. That was the one when you're like, all right, he's just always going to lose his feuds here. And will that affect him on Raw or SmackDown? It's tough to say because about a third to a quarter of the audience that watches NXT or that watches Raw watches or in SmackDown watches NXT. So, Miz rarely wins his feuds, but when he does win his feuds, they tend to be for titles. So when he moves to Raw or SmackDown, maybe that's what he'll go through. But, you know, that is the same thing that we brought up because it's the same concern that we had regarding Grayson Waller. Anything you want to add to that, Nate?
I don't even know what you just said.
Okay, no problem.
Yep.
Moving on to the next.
I'm trying to cobble together a PowerShell script right now.
I don't even know what that means, so I'll just move on. Moving the email from Brian Alston from last week, senior VIP Torch subscriber and adjunct Torch contributor, as he writes up there. I see he's an adjunct with little PhD studies going on there. He says, hello, friends. I haven't watched tonight's NXT, so this is last week's. So I will talk to you next week. I read Nate's TV report. Good job, Nate. For the record, I like the Kiana James, Colin Henley, Josh Briggs, Brooks Jensen storyline. Why, Brian, why? It's been going on since November and had a couple of twists, and it should have ended in November without the couple of twists. My question is about Pretty Deadly. I am a huge fan. Their Day in the Life of the Tag Team Champions videos was an instant classic. I agree with you that Elton Prince and Pitt Wilson are a fully formed tag team and are main roster ready. However, is there any room for PD on Raw and SmackDown? There are so many teams that are not getting any ring camera time. Where is Hit Row? I would love to see a series of matches between Joaquin Wild and Cruz Del Toro and Los Lotharios. Question, would you move up Pretty Deadly during the draft or wait until after SummerSlam season? Or SummerSlam or the season premiere of Raw and SmackDown. Don't forget to listen to Tom Stout's Torch VIP exclusive bonus point podcast where he discusses the wrestlers in the Performance Center. Another NXT podcast is a Torch VIP exclusive 8 years back this week, well, which was last week. Tom and Kelly Wells will review the April 22nd, 2015 episode, which features three of the four horsewomen in a number one contenders match and Kevin Owens fights Alex Riley. They also talk movie trivia. The subject is Killer Dolls. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of the evening. So we kind of discussed this. The thing that separates Pretty Deadly from those other teams that you mentioned is not only are they good in the ring, like Legado del Fantasma, but they have the promo skills like Hit Row. They can blend all those together, whereas these other teams quite can't. I mean, I brought up New Day already, and I brought up them just, you know, their feud they could have with the Bloodline and the Usos. They have more to work with than the other tag teams do. Their characters have more range and depth to them than the other teams do. So I feel like in that regard, there is going to be a place for them on whichever show they get drafted to, and I would move them during the draft. This was written before the closing angle on the show tonight, but they seem like they're written out of the show, so it seems like the draft is most likely. And let's hit tonight's email from the good Dr. Kevin P. Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I promise I'll get to the focus back on NXT in a moment, but since you don't routinely get to talk main roster news, what do you think about the new WWE Heavyweight Championship belt? All right. I understand the concept. Take big gold, which everyone likes, take big logo, which really nobody likes, and fuse them together and get big gold logo. Big gold logo. Here's the problem. It looks like big gold is giving birth to big logo in about 3 months. I saw almost universal praise for the title on my timeline last night, but the second I saw that thing, I thought it was not good. I'm not a fan of the title design. Again, understand the concept. Execution, to me, very poor. I don't want my title belts to look like they're expecting in a few months. I want them to just look like title belts and not like something you make on WWE 2K. So, for the title belt, those are my thoughts. What about you, Nate?
So, okay, this is something I can talk about and try to do this at the same time. So I'm a little bit higher on the design than you are, but I still don't love it. I am a huge big gold is like my first love, right? I absolutely love that the title design. I've got it hanging up on my wall. I've got it covered in signatures. I love the thing. So I'm glad to see the design sort of back. I think like if Triple H probably had his way, we would have just seen big gold come back as it is. I'm sure it was some sort of a corporate decision or, you know, to have a giant corporate logo slapped right in the middle of it. I understand why they do it, but whatever. I agree. I think the execution was a little bit wonky. It looks to me more like a toy than it does like a championship. It also to me looks a hell of a lot better than the Universal and WWE title designs and, you know, the women's title designs. I like the fact that it's covered in gold. Like I that's one of my biggest pet peeves. I'm a title guy. I love title designs. It's one of my biggest pet peeves about the, you know, WWE title, Universal title and the two women's titles in WWE. They just don't feel like championships. They look like giant class rings. And I know that's an overused term for those titles, but it's the best one I can use really at the top of my head. But at least this one has some gold in it. It kind of feels, which gives it a bit more of like a gravitas, I guess. But I don't know. I guess I could take it or leave it pretty much. Plus just the whole concept right now of having a brand new world champion, that's a whole nother story. I feel like it kind of in a way devalues Roman and his run. But it also, whenever somebody wins that championship, it doesn't feel as important as somebody beating Roman and then separating the titles or something like that, you know? So I don't know. Those are my two cents anyway.
I mean, I don't think it diminishes Roman. I think it actually elevates him just because, like, they're basically saying you're too dominant to have to introduce a new title, right? I don't think that diminishes him. If anything, it means that he's too good, right? So that's what I would argue. The only thing about the women's titles that I do like, the entire strap isn't all blue or red or black. They have the color embellishments on the plate instead of the entire strap. And the white strap just, I think because I'm a sucker for the white IC title.
My custom Nate title, because I'm a mark and I have my own custom title hanging up on my wall with my face on it. I'll put a picture up on Twitter if people want me to. But that is a white strap as well. I feel like the white strap just looks so classy.
And the other thing too is you go back to 2002 after the draft and Brock Lesnar had that exclusive contract with SmackDown, they didn't introduce a new title design. They just brought back Big Gold, right? With all the rumors going about and the nostalgia for the greatest WWF, WWE title design ever, why not just bring back Winged Eagle and just update it slightly? Like, it's that title, that design of that title, I would say.
It's so iconic.
The most iconic, the most prestigious, the most popular amongst all the designs in WWE history, WWF history, right? They should have just gone to that instead of trying to make an amalgamation that turned out to look more like, I don't know, a high school project.
The only problem I see with that, though, and I would love that. I would have marked out so bad, like so hard if they did that. The only problem I see with that is then it looks so different than every other title belt that they have.
And their need for uniformity is really bad. It's disgusting in the entire sense of the word, because at least when Cena was champion and he had a spinner belt, they were able to use that spinner to put a bit of touch onto it. And I know they have the side plates, but
sorry, I just fixed it.
Okay. Well, when Edge was champion, the spinner was rated R, not the WWE logo, right? And so and when Punk was champion, he had the star in the middle and everything. So there's just they work themselves into a cycle where it's like, oh, we need stars, but we can't have stars if they're in the company, so we have to have the company be front and center, but then we don't have any stars, we've got to have the company be the front. So to me, just getting rid of the logo would have been a huge plus, but they didn't. They reinserted the logo and made it front and center. When titles in the past, what was front and center wasn't the company logo, but the title design, right? So the Intercontinental title, you had continents on the front title plate. With the world title, you had World Heavyweight Champion or WWE Champion right now. It wasn't just the logo, right? There was more to it than that. And yeah, it says, you know, heavyweight around the rim or ring or whatever, but the focal point of the titles used to not be the company, but the actual title. So there are just, there are a lot of things around this title reveal that I believe are questionable, and it doesn't have anything to do with storyline. So, moving on, Kevin says, that said, where do you all sit on the Jensen Briggs drama? I'm kind of over it, kind of, as the lovers' quarrels have gone stale for me. Am I missing something? No. Lastly, I saw a post earlier today which reawoke a thought that I had last week in light of some of the main roster folks out with injuries. What's the deal with Roddy Strong? I swear, if we go a week without a Robert Strong question, I will celebrate, because it comes up every week.
It's usually me bringing it up.
Oh, well, I don't think I've heard a peep prior to the post I saw today. Thanks, as always, go VIP and listen to AYB. Office hours are not over. So, the last I remember of Roddy Strong being on TV was Damon Kemp writing about from the attack by the ambulance or something like that. And there's really been nothing that I've seen or even really cared to look into regarding his status. From what I can gather, I believe his contract expires this year, early next year. And I don't know if he ever asked for a release. I never heard anything about it. But they might just not have anything for him, and they're focusing on talent who are more likely to be on TV as wrestlers in the next half decade to a decade. He could, I've always thought that he'd be such a tremendous coach at the PC if they could get him to sign a contract. If he still wants to wrestle, of course, AEW's there, ROH is there, Impact is there. He could even try a run in New Japan if he wanted, and I think he'd do fine. But if he wanted to wind down, and his wife is also over in AEW too, so. But if he wanted to wind down, I think, he's in a perfect spot to take those skills and be a coach. But this is all just speculation because, again, I haven't heard anything on my end regarding Roderick Strong. I also haven't done any digging into it. So that's all I got to say regarding Roderick Strong. What about you, Nate?
Yeah, I really don't have a whole heck of a lot to add either. I mean, I've tried. I've done a little bit of like Googling and stuff, trying to find something on, Roderick Strong and the most that I'm finding are people like, where's Roderick Strong? You know, and kind of just like watching clips of, you know, him being written off and things like that is kind of all I'm finding. I don't know. I'd like to see him do something. You know, we keep talking about him being, you know, a trainer in the PC or something like that. I think that'd be perfect for him if, you know, they don't have something to do for him on TV, you know, or just either write out the contract and, you know, go join your friends in AEW or something like that. I don't know. But
he's more likely to be put on ROH if he goes because of his connection. He's Mr. ROH after all.
Yeah, actually, yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, so something like that. But that's kind of, I kind of feel like that's probably a more likely thing. I mean, we haven't seen him. I don't think there's any plan. I don't know. I mean, it's not like we hear anything about any plan for him or anything leaks about it. I mean, like, even, you know, at least Cameron Grimes, we're hearing something finally now about him potentially getting called up. You know, and he's been off TV forever. But
that's another one we predicted correctly for the last 2 years.
Yeah, right. but with, you know, with Roddy, I mean, he's been like completely MIA, and, you know, nothing's getting leaked or anything. And, you know, I mean, not for nothing. I mean, I like Roderick Strong, but I mean, it's Roderick Strong. I don't feel like, you know, if you bring him up to the main roster, especially now after he's been off TV for so long, nobody's going to know who he is. So,
and if anything, he'd be in a Madcap Moss role.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, if that, I feel like they'd have him as like a, you know, a kind of bona fide jobber for like a year or so. But like, yeah, I kind of just feel like there's something either going on where, you know, they can't come to an agreement, or, you know, he's just riding out his contract, and, you know, once contract's up and the non-compete's done, then, or actually, I think it's a contract. Contracts up, you don't need to wait for non-compete. I don't remember, but you know,
yeah,
what I mean,
non-compete is usually just some abuses and firings.
Yeah, so yeah, really, but once but once he's eligible to go to another company, then yeah, I think, you know, actually the way you said about ROH, I think that definitely makes at least the most sense if he was to go to one of the Tony Khan wrestling promotions.
I think that's it, right?
I think that is it. I think that is it. So, all right. So, I guess I'll wrap up the show. That's our show, guys. PWT Talks NXT. I was here for most of it. You can blame. Well, I guess I can blame my own shoddy PowerShell script for not working in the first place, causing me to have to take time out of this podcast to fix my email server. But that is what it is. Nate Lindberg on Twitter. You can follow me there. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up for spring break-in. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at @the_lee253, and my report for spring break-in is also up for you to view and get my written thoughts on tonight's lackluster show.
Yes, yes, yes. And we'll also sign off for Brad as well. Brad, again, thank you very much for sticking around and filling in for me when, you know, I couldn't come to the phone right now. All right, guys, we will see you next week. Take care.